concept of engaging with regulators and understanding their challenges too, as they too go through the modernization of their frameworks and their internal cultures and methods and even staffing, is essential, because a lot of what happens inside a bank is driven by either real or sometimes imagined assumptions about what the regulators will or will not allow or accept or like, and understanding how regulators are thinking about these things and bringing in the voice of the modernizing regulator is really, really important.
Barefoot innovation starts right now.
My guest today is Anders Wahlberg Stoke, who is the global head of policy at Citi FinTech. I got to know Anders earlier this year when I moderated a panel that he was on at FinX Tech in New York. And since then, we've talked many times. Something that I immediately noticed about him is that he has a very special way of talking about innovation, a way with words that makes him not just interesting, but gives a fresh insight on a lot of the things that we talk about. This might be because he has lived all over the world, and it might also be because he was once a journalist. If you look at the show notes, you'll see a sampling of his journalism adventures, which have included things like car chases in Croatia and being driven around blindfolded and at gunpoint while pursuing a story in Latin America. All large banks have innovation initiatives, efforts like labs and accelerators and incubators and so on, and they also all have people devoted to integrating good ideas into mainstream products and operations in the bank. They're all looking at issues like blockchains, big data, artificial intelligence and machine learning, human-centered design, issues like how to create a user experience that their customers will actually truly love. Banks have plenty of innovative people, of course. In our talk, Anders talks about the fact that CEO at Citi, Michael Corbett, has said that the bank is actually a technology company with a banking license rather than the other way around. However, very few banks of any size really have true innovation cultures. It's partly because they are mature organizations, and it's partly because some, like Citi, are huge, which makes it hard to do rapid change. And it's also because banking has been heavily regulated for so long, which fosters conservative, risk-averse cultures and slow decision-making. In today's world of rapid technology change, banks need innovation, and also many innovators need banks. And so it's important that the big banks are investing in figuring out how to do all this well, including how to work with small startups. So Citi FinTech was formed in late 2015 to pursue what Andres calls fintegration. The impetus was a critical insight. They suddenly realized that their customers' standards had fundamentally changed, and so that instead of comparing Citi to other banks, their customers had begun to measure them against the experiences they were having with technology firms. And that then set a new high bar. Andres explains how they're tackling this challenge. He describes the new kinds of skills they hire now. He explains their focus on agile methodology and co-creation of products and learning to experiment. He talks about building multidisciplinary teams that now work concurrently on initiatives instead of having the old waterfall process in which something got passed around from group to group in the bank until in the end, as he puts it, it often bore little relationship to the gleaming idea they had started with. He also talks about obsessing on the customer experience. They did thousands of focus groups asking questions like, is this intuitive? Do you really understand it? And trying to be disciplined in assessing the feedback honestly and not sort of hearing what they wanted to hear. Anders also talks about asking how the bank should feel in the palm of the customer's hand. He calls mobile an exoskeleton for the human mind that connects us to all the world's information all the time. And he talks about the issues ahead in artificial intelligence and privacy and data aggregation, including the challenges that all of this poses for regulators. He says the key for regulators is going to be to understand the upside benefits of technology and not just see the risks. I think my favorite insight from this conversation is his view that banks need to be open and not closed. He says the customer relationship used to be one-on-one between a bank and its customers, and of course, the regulations are still built for that model. But today, there are multiple parties in any consumer's financial life. Consumers are using apps. They're doing what he calls modular financial relationships. And so he says if the banks want to continue to be at the core of that customer relationship, they're going to have to build an open model, and regulators are going to have to adjust to that as well. He says you can't achieve anything great if you remain focused internally because, as he puts it, there's just too much good stuff going on outside. He also said don't build a big, beautiful wall around your customers. Go in the opposite direction. Note that in our discussion, he invites innovators to come and work with them to experiment and learn by using the APIs and data in their lab. And we'll put the link to that site for innovators in the show notes. As you listen, think about how regulators and also community banks could get access to this same kind of hands-on experience with financial innovation. The sooner they do, the faster the system and its customers are going to benefit from what Andres calls breaking a few windows and letting in fresh air and sunshine. I know you'll enjoy our conversation.
I am absolutely delighted to say that my guest today is Andres Wahlberg Stock, who is the Global Head of Policy for Citi FinTech. Andres, welcome.
Thank you very much, Joanne. Thank you for having me.
I'm so happy you can be my guest today. We've gotten to know each other through conferences and events where we've both been there, and we both spoke this spring on a panel at FinEx Tech in New York. And I remember, and I know I've told you this before, being very taken not only by the ideas that you share, but also the way you share them. You have a livelier vocabulary, I think, than a lot of people who talk about regulatory topics. So I really welcome that. I remember you saying something. We were doing a prep call for that panel, and I remember you saying, using the term scar tissue to talk about how hard it is to change sometimes. And I thought that was it'd be wonderful to have you on my show.
Thank you. That is really, really kind of you. I think we can only disappoint your listeners from this point forward, but let's give it a try.
Yeah, not to put any pressure on you. So I'd love to start by asking you to talk first about yourself. Tell us about you, the journey that's brought you to our conversation today.
Well, I joined Citi from a fintech startup. But I should clarify that that was a fintech startup from the year 99 and 2000. I joined Citi in 2001. The startup, even though it had very big backers, it imploded as the first internet bubble burst. And Citi had been looking to acquire some of it or to do something with us. And I picked up the phone and said, you know, this thing is going to be no more, but how about it? And they said, like in the movies, can you come up next week? I did, and I've been very, very fortunate to always be able to be on the front lines of the digital transformation of one of the world's leading banks, and it's just been a fantastic sequence of opportunities to be exploring new dimensions and, being part of the teams that built the first downloadable mobile banking app from a major U.S. bank in 2007, the first iPad app from a major U.S. bank in 2011, and then 2015, the world's first bank with an Apple Watch app. I gush because it's just been so much fun.
Yeah, wow, that's exciting. And prior to that, you have a background in journalism. Am I right about that?
You are, yes. You are, until I decided to start making an honest living and go into banking. I do find the communication skills always come in handy within a large organization. But even maybe more importantly, banking too is about making the right information available to people at the right time. And so I think there are deeper parallels at play there.
Yeah. And so you don't have you're not a technologist, is that correct? Or am I wrong about that?
Well, I did start out studying engineering before I switched into journalism. So I've always had a great affinity for technology. I've always enjoyed technology very much as a consumer, always been very excited about new consumer technologies and everything. And so I think this is, this is just so much, so it's just so naturally enjoyable, if you like, that it's just a great convergence of interests.
Yeah, I feel that way too. And one more question on your background. How did you get into fintech then in the first place?
Well, fintech it was a startup that I joined. It was a startup with really big backers at the time, America Online, and the biggest private equity fund in Latin America. So it was a fintech vehicle before the day, and we were not the only fintech around. I think the concept of democratizing finance and helping people make better choices when it comes to how to manage their money, what financial products are right for them, how to better invest their money, etc. All the things that we see as areas of focus for fintech in 2017. To be honest, not all of those ideas are that new. They were already around back in 2000. So it just seemed like a great place in which to put to good use some of the things I had learned in financial journalism in my previous life.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So I love talking with you because you're working on what I think is one of the most fascinating and definitely most important junctures in this whole landscape, and that is you're working on the policy aspects of financial innovation. You're trying to work with a big bank, a fintech innovation technology world, and a regulatory system, and figure out how we're going to optimize the regulation. And I know you like to talk about the concept of the bank of the future, and you use the term fintegration to talk about how we're going to enable banks and fintechs to come together and get the best of both and what they have. So tell us about that. What should the bank of the future be about, and how are we going to get there?
The fintechs have brought fantastic focus on the consumer's known and unknown needs and desires, and they've been really laser-focused on specific pieces of the financial experience for consumers. They are really, really strong on getting to market quickly, on not carrying a backpack full of legacy technologies that make it harder for them to run quickly. They are not encumbered by large structures, by long processes, but it's not all strengths. And when you look at how startups and banks' strengths and weaknesses complement each other, it's really a great, great fit. Any successful fintech startup finds itself suddenly facing up to a number of regulatory and compliance issues that maybe were not at the forefront when they started out. And for a bank, I think, you know, learning how to partner with fintechs and how to integrate the best that the fintech ecosystem has to offer is an essential skill as well, even if only for the following reason, which is one of just basic economics. The fintech ecosystem has received, about $20 billion in funding a year over the last couple of years. There are thousands of fintech startups out there. Don't think anyone knows exactly how many, but, you know, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000. That's a massively big ecosystem with massive intelligence, some of the most driven, passionate, entrepreneurial minds in the industry are on that side, and they may not find it so easy individually as a company to get the funding, but in the aggregate, the ecosystem is very, very well funded, very liquid, and the funding is from sources of capital that have a much higher appetite for risk than a bank can have with its working capital. And so for any bank, no matter how smart or global or anything, to aspire to single-handedly outperform that ecosystem and come up with better solutions in each one of those areas of focus of fintech than that whole ecosystem is going to be able to produce, that just doesn't seem very realistic. Our working capital, we can never have that tolerance for risk that a VC has when placing bets on individual startups, etc. And so it just seems to make a lot of sense, in addition to the complementary skill sets and strengths of banks and startups, to think about re-engineering yourself. And I don't mean just technologically, I mean culturally, maybe more than technologically, to be on the lookout for the best that the fintech ecosystem has to offer and to learn how to very quickly integrate the best or make it seamlessly accessible to your consumers through some form of open banking where you don't look to build, a big, beautiful wall around your customers and just keep them isolated and keep their data locked in, where you go in the opposite direction and go for open banking and realize that consumers are going to want to build modular financial graphs for themselves where they pick and choose what they like out there. And I think if a bank can aspire to create a lifelong relationship at the core of that graph, where the consumer knows that the bank is there with them as a partner, that would be a great way to go.
It's a perfect segue then into talking about Citi FinTech. So tell us more about that that initiative, that unit, what your mission is, what you're working on, how it's put together.
We created Citi FinTech as a new unit within Citi's global consumer banking group in late 2015, when it started to become clear that consumers were no longer comparing Bank A with Bank B and Bank C, but they were starting to gauge how good their bank was by comparing it to, or by reference, if you like, to other providers that were transforming their lives for the better, whether in how they consume entertainment or movies, or how they get from point A to point B in a city, or how they find lodging, etc. And so that ease of use and that mobile-first, always-on, 24/7 availability in the palm of your hand was now the need for that was growing at a pace that just made it very difficult to consider that you would be able to get there incrementally from where we were before. And so that sort of disruption required a new type of organization, one that would be able to work at digital speed. And our CEO has said we like to think of ourselves as a technology company that happens to have a banking license. Working like a digital company means shorter cycles. It means more experimentation. It means not being afraid to fail and to try new things and to push the envelope. And that is why this unit was created. And it is, I think we can call it the tip of the spear of this reinvention and of figuring out, in partnership with the other parts of consumer banking at Citi, how best to meet those mobile-first expectations of consumers today.
And how are you doing that?
Well,
it's
a focus on agile methodology, on having multidisciplinary teams at the table, figuring out what is possible and what is desirable together in real time, and clearly moving away from the old waterfall process where maybe a business person would come up with an idea and then that idea would just get passed on from team to team, from function to function, from the business requirements to technology, design, compliance vetting, legal vetting, et cetera, until, to be frank, what came out at the end very often bore little relationship to the gleaming idea where it had started out. And so when you do everything agile, first of all, you can really put things out that add value to your consumers much faster. And you can also avoid getting sucked into really long projects where you are wedded to one idea and not able to depart if it turns out that idea maybe doesn't look so great once you're further down the road, or better ideas are available. And so maintaining that agility and that flexibility is the essence of the way we're doing this.
So does it work as sort of a lab? Are you bringing in fintechs and partnering with them and so on? Or how are you getting the fresh ideas in, or are you hiring people who have them?
We've done, I would check the box that says all of the above. There are consumer labs within Citi FinTech. There are people we have brought in from major digital companies, whether on the payments front, on the e-commerce front, and every one of those additions brings in a new and very valuable perspective and helps rethink what a bank is about, how a bank operates, and maybe above all, how a bank should feel in the palm of the consumer's hand. So it's a variety of things. I would also cite digital acceleration, engaging with the fintech ecosystem in very large-scale ways. We've held multiple events where I don't know if I dare call them like slow motion hackathons, but they are events over the course of a few weeks where startups are invited to come develop things with Citi and figure out what new additions could be useful, what solutions they can think of, etc. And we've had thousands of startups participating in these things. We've done them all over the world, in the Americas, North and South, in Europe, in Africa, in the Middle East, in Asia, and they are fantastic in terms of bringing in that outside perspective. I like to think of it as breaking a few windows and letting in fresh air and sunlight, especially at large organizations. Bringing in that external perspective is just incredibly refreshing and fruitful.
That is so interesting. So to remain agile, are you then running sort of small-scale, experimental new solutions as part of this?
We're working, yes, multiple things in parallel, and I think learning how to experiment is another one of those skills, together with how to integrate the best of fintech, or fintegration, as we always called it. I think learning to experiment is critical, and I think anyone who works at a bank will know that being able to experiment at speed is not just about product management, it's not just about design, it's not just about great technology teams and quality development. It is also, and very fundamentally, about figuring out how to not only meet but exceed your own compliance standards, but to do so at a very different pace than the traditional waterfall system. And I think that is where, Joanne, the concept of engaging with regulators and understanding their challenges too, as they too go through the modernization of their frameworks and their internal cultures and methods and even staffing, is essential, because a lot of what happens inside a bank is driven by either real or sometimes imagined assumptions about what the regulators will or will not allow or accept or like. And understanding how regulators are thinking about these things and bringing in the voice of the modernizing regulator is really, really important in a large organization.
That's great. So you believe regulators are modernizing. You're meeting modernizing regulators.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, it's, I think, absolutely fascinating how you start to see a commonality of concerns and interests and urgencies in regulators and policymakers around the world. First of all, there's something I know you, Joanne, have observed firsthand, which is the global race to create a really welcoming, receptive, and fertile environment for the development of fintech. And there's the equivalent of a regulatory arms race between, just to name the ones that come to mind first, but maybe the UK, Singapore, Australia, Hong Kong, the list goes on and on. But essentially, there are many governments and regulators around the world that have realized that there's a lot of upside to creating an environment where both banks and startups can experiment, whether individually or together, on a safe level playing field where no consumers get harmed, where the financial system is never put at risk, but where it's not equally difficult for everyone to innovate, rather where it's equally easy for everyone to innovate and to experiment safely. And the markets that create the best environments for this sort of work are going to win, clearly. And so when I mentioned, Joanne, the commonality of concerns and interests, that is something I think we're starting to see around the world. And I would go as far as to say that regulators in Washington, D.C., or in Hanoi, Vietnam, are actually focusing on the same sorts of issues. And that's not a metaphor. It's actually very literal.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I see modernizing regulators everywhere. Actually, just today, I was working on my weekly blog post, and that's what I'm writing about. People think that regulators can't change. They have this idea that the regulators are somehow stuck and will forever do things more or less the way they do them now. And that's not true. There are regulators all over the world that really are stepping forward. And it's hard. I think they have a harder job than the industry does to become more agile. But there's just no doubt about it that there's a lot of leadership underway.
Well, they are ultimately responsible for keeping the consumers safe and the system out of jeopardy. So it is hard, and cultural change in any sizable organization, and regulators are sizable organizations, that's hard for everyone.
That's for sure. How about the cultural change inside a big bank? And Citi is one of the biggest and most complicated banks on the planet, I think. How do you work on that in the bank? And do you find you have to, does the innovation need to be sort of protected from the mainstream to some extent so that little experiments can flourish? And then if so, how do you inject them into the bigger company and have them able to change it?
We are the world's most global bank. I think that is a great strength when it comes to innovation, because it means you have multiple sources of ingenuity and new ideas in all the lines of business, in all the geographies. People are coming up with great ideas, and I think it's really important to be clear that nobody owns innovation in a large organization. You would really be doing the organization a disservice if you thought that you own innovation. And so I think facilitating and catalyzing all of this ingenuity that we have all over the world is an essential component of what we're trying to do. It's about facilitating, it's about supporting, it's about encouraging along all of those great ideas. And I think it's also really important to understand that there are few one-size-fits-all solutions. And so as befits a global organization, you have to make sure that you have a very broad base. I honestly never see a tension between innovation and the business as usual. In fact, I think the pressure, the demand for agility and for making the organization forward compatible is just an enterprise level strategic imperative. It's not something that a plucky band of people are trying to push against a resistive organization. Absolutely not. We wouldn't be here if the organization overall didn't push for this.
That's really interesting. What would you point to as lessons learned so far? You've been at it for coming up on 2 years with the Citi FinTech. Do you have some insights that have arisen from this that you can share?
Let's see. Well, first of all, openness and an external focus, I would say, are really essential. Right? You cannot achieve anything great if you remain internally focused and if you play, quote unquote, to internal audiences. There is just too much good stuff going on outside for anyone to remain internally focused. Point two, which is probably actually point one, is be obsessive about focusing on the consumer and their needs. And just in the first year of work at Citi FinTech, we did in the order of 2,500 customer focus groups, interviews, interactions, feedback loops, etc. At every little step along the way, we were testing things with consumers, asking them, what do you think of this? Does this make sense to you? Is it intuitive? Do you understand what we're putting in front of you here? How do you feel about this, etc.? And then being really honest with yourself in listening to that feedback and acting in consequence, and not just using it as a rubber stamp of validation. Oh, yeah, focus group said they would love it. And then, in the real world, things don't work so well. No, when you do what we call co-creation, when you create the experience with consumers, the results are very, very different. And that would be a big piece of advice.
That's great. Thank you. What would you say are the most exciting fintech or innovation trends? What product areas or channels or enabling technologies do you think are the most transformative and most promising?
Not to dodge the question, but I'm not sure that most of the innovation actually comes from fintech startups when it comes to perspectives right now. I think the broader trend of the extent to which mobile has become like an exoskeleton for the mind, the way we've supplemented our natural intellectual capabilities with this always-on connection to pretty much all human knowledge out there, with the ability to crunch massive, superhuman volumes of data in the cloud without even having to carry that computing power around in our hands, that is what is truly transformative. And I think the ability to step back and rethink the way things have been done for years or decades or even centuries is going to be the next frontier. I think some of the taxonomies of financial products that we've all lived with forever were still and are still anchored in merely human capabilities, and I think the new powers that mobility confer on all of us are going to be the catalyst of a probably reinvention of those financial products themselves. I think multiple angles of credit are ripe for reinvention. You're seeing some attempts at that, but we have not yet really seen artificial intelligence and machine learning truly bite. I think that is going to be really interesting and transformational. I also know, as do you, that that is one, at the same time, great source of hope, but also massive looming concern for regulators and policymakers around the world, because monitoring what goes on when the intelligence becomes suprahuman and very difficult to audit is something that weighs as much in people's minds as the potential benefits that unleashing AI and machine learning on financial services could bring.
Yeah, I really agree. Let's maybe use that as a segue to talking about some of the regulatory challenges, and maybe let's start with that one. How do you think the regulators are going to be able to get equipped to look at the trends underway in big data and massive uses of data combined with artificial intelligence and machine learning and sort out the upside opportunity and let that thrive while also dealing with the downside risk? That's going to be very challenging.
That is a very, very important question. And I think it's really encouraging to know that regulators we've seen that across markets and continents. I actually haven't met a regulator yet who is not thinking about these things, considering even before artificial intelligence and machine learning how to best provide the right type of stewardship as banking data becomes the lifeblood of the fintech ecosystem, and I mean startups and banks together. And then migrating one level up to the question of artificial intelligence and machine learning, I think they are all engaging with companies that are doing leading-edge work in these domains. It's really important to understand, before you start to worry too much, really important to understand what the upside is, because the upside can be great. It can be great in terms of efficiencies. It can be great in terms of financial inclusion, non-traditional credit criteria, et cetera, et cetera. And understanding the dimension of that upside is what then makes it worth everybody's while to focus on the challenges and understand how to mitigate the risks. And I think there are areas that really do need to be thought through. One that I personally find really interesting is the somewhat black box-ish nature of artificial intelligence and machine learning platforms, where it's very resource expensive, resource heavy to get a system to explain how it got to a particular decision or outcome, because it is a nonlinear process. It is not based on pre-written algorithms or software. It is a machine exploring different paths in a neural way and discarding many alternatives. And to ask that machine to keep track of everything that it considered and then discarded and how it actually got to the decision that it got just adds huge systemic overhead to that machine. But I think it is increasingly something that is being seen as a requirement that these machines should not be completely black boxes, because you might get to undesirable outcomes, and understanding how to course correct and even becoming aware of when these unwanted outcomes are starting to get generated is essential.
Yeah, I could not agree more with you, especially on the financial inclusion point. I think our regular listeners know that I think that this is one of this combined with the mobile phone itself as a delivery channel is the answer to financial inclusion. If we can use more robust new kinds of data to risk assess people who don't necessarily have a traditional credit history. And regulators are moving toward trying to do this. But as you say, the question of how you're going to make sure there isn't an inappropriate bias in this black box is a tremendous challenge. GAO did a roundtable on this recently on AI, which I participated in, and are going to have a report out this fall that I think is going to be very, very interested, looking at issues like computational ethics and computational integrity and explainable AI, so-called, somehow the regulators are going to have to be comfortable enough that they can judge either the fairness of the outcome or the fairness of the methodology.
Indeed. But, you know, Joanne, in fairness to the regulators and the policymakers, at least half of the burden or the challenge is on the industry's shoulders, because I remember that you chaired earlier this year a great session on RegTech, on the application of new technologies to regulatory compliance at the annual Regulatory Compliance Conference. And I remember very vividly that in the comments that I was hearing from participants afterwards, I found real concern that for many, many, many people in the industry, these topics were, really not on their radar screen. And I think it's important for the industry to develop its own skill sets on this front, and not just put all of the burden on the regulators.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. That was at the ABA's Regulatory Compliance Conference and was their first RegTech session, and I'm sure they're going to be doing a great deal more with it for these very reasons. The industry's got a tremendous challenge. I worry, too. I think AI in credit and finance is mostly going to be clearly good for the consumer if it's properly done, which is a big if, but I worry a bit that AI is sort of on defense in the popular culture conversation right now. People are very afraid that robots are going to take all the jobs away and so on. And I think it's important for the financial industry to be, as you just said, helping people understand the upside opportunity here. Because if we fail to capture that, we're going to miss one of the most important good things that's ever happened in the history of finance, just getting better at letting more people in the system through better information about them.
Indeed. And I think, you know, first of all, consumers themselves are increasingly coming to terms with this new world in which they are often the product on social media, for instance. And frankly, I think that is great training because it helps people start to get some clarity in their own minds about the trade-offs between, first of all, forms of privacy, which don't have the same meaning if it's a human being looking at your data or just a machine, and it's effectively anonymous to and invisible to anyone except for you as a consumer when you're seeing different ads served to you, etc. But it's not like someone is actually looking at what you're doing there, not a human being at any rate. But people are learning to negotiate with brands. They are learning to appreciate that data-driven, data-fueled life is a richer life, that if I track the steps that I walked or if I know more about my vital indicators during the day, etc., that a data-fueled life is actually something that works well for me as an individual, as a consumer, and that therefore I'm starting to be better informed and better positioned to negotiate with brands. What do I get in return? What value do I get if I allow access to parts of my data sets? And I think the fact that other industries are maybe a little bit out in front is probably a good thing, because money is sensitive enough topic for people that we don't need to be blazing a trail on data at the same time. That said, there are great potential benefits for people, for consumers, in better data applications, in better understanding their spending patterns, in better understanding how they can better save, invest, build their own future, and achieve their potential as individuals through a good use of finance. And so I think there is a lot more to look forward to than to fear, as long as some essential ground setting precautions are in place.
Yeah. What other big regulatory issues do you think are critical?
I'm very interested in data flows. And I think here in the US, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau's request for information not too long ago about data access and data aggregation brought out and brought to the surface and into the spotlight a lot of really important questions. It used to be a relationship that was pretty much one-to-one between a bank and a consumer. And now, for anyone who uses anything in the fintech domain, it's probably a four-way relationship between the bank, the consumer, but then a third-party fintech app maybe, or more than one, and a fourth-party data aggregator whose presence and activity is very often not even known to the consumer. And so all the rules that were more or less clear for the one-to-one bank and consumer relationship are suddenly pretty unclear when you start to think about cascading responsibilities for privacy preservation, for data stewardship, for who gets to see what about the consumer, even when the consumer is consenting to the data being exported to a third party that he or she trusts. Those are central questions to which maybe the European Union is closer than others to providing answers. But I think these are questions that are going to be with us for quite some time going forward. And I think they are critically important to address and to solve, because data truly is the lifeblood of the fintech ecosystem. No fintech startup can really add much value to a consumer's life without access to some fundamental information about that consumer's financial behavior, their accounts, etc. And so figuring out how to do what is right by consumers to empower them, to add value to their data in ways that still keep them safe and still keep all the players in compliance is critically important.
Yeah, I really agree. I think that one of the keys to this is maybe to clarify who is liable in what scenario if something goes wrong, so that we don't have a sort of fear to participate either on the consumer's part or among the parties and the provider group.
Agreed.
And people are working on that.
Agreed. Yeah. And I think if we could just maybe even take that to the next level, not only figuring out when things go wrong, but setting it up so that things will always go right, and making sure that the right information is accessed on behalf of the consumer, fit for purpose, that nobody can come up and vacuum up every little piece of data about you when all you wanted was for them to have access to your checking account transaction history or something like that. There are questions that maybe we're only just learning how to ask around consumers and their data. And I think those are going to be central, not just to regulators and from a compliance perspective, but to constructing further customer trust in not only banks, but the whole fintech ecosystem.
Yeah, this is such a great example of the sort of what innovation is doing to regulation, because these issues are outstripping the old regulatory framework, which was designed in an analog age. And we're going to have more and more of these kinds of things popping up where the market is now doing something that it didn't used to do with different kinds of players involved. And how we're going to have those agile regulations we were talking about before, it's going to require the regulator to have an experimentation capability, I think, just as you're doing with FinTech as a bank. It sounded before like you're in favor of regulatory sandboxes. Am I reading that correctly?
That depends on what the meaning of sandbox is. I think one of the challenges when you mention sandboxes is that people tend to think they're talking about the same thing, but sometimes they're not. So in some cases, when you say sandbox, people will think it's an IT environment with fake data where, as a startup or as a bank, you can come in and play around with things without actually being out in the real world. Others will interpret it very differently and think that it refers to a system of temporarily relaxed regulation on a specific angle or domain where someone can come and experiment at a small scale, but in the real world with real consumers, real accounts, without putting the system at risk overall and while keeping consumers harmless. And I think all of those have value for someone or for multiple types of players in the industry, newcomers and or incumbents. I think maybe more than sandboxes specifically, what is really important is the cultural flexibility on the part of regulators and their partners within large organizations, the control functions, everyone who's involved in all this, to understand that there are many questions for which we don't have the answers yet, and there are many other questions that we haven't even figured out how to ask. And that you cannot continue to work to a really rigid grid without assimilating the need for some flexibility and some a cultural openness, I would say, to understand that for the benefit of society, so that consumers can take advantage of the great benefits that fintech, whether done by startups or by banks or both, the great benefits fintech can bring to society and to individuals, to be realized require updated regulatory frameworks that allow market participants to extract those benefits and not to be held back indefinitely by uncertainty or by just a complete mismatch between existing old-fashioned pre-digital legal and regulatory frameworks and the potential of what technology can bring to the table today.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I'll link in the show notes to some research by the Aspen Institute on a global survey of regulatory sandboxes and reg labs. Very interesting. As you say, there's a lot of variation in them. I know we're going to run out of time. Let me ask you very quickly how you are viewing the potential for big tech to come into finance. There's been a lot of sort of flurry of conversation in the past week about what would happen if, for instance, Amazon bought a bank or something like that. How do you look at that?
A number of major tech players have come together in a group that calls itself Financial Innovation Now, FIN, and they have been publishing some positions based out of DC. There's a really interesting paper that the European Banking Federation, EBF, published, I believe, in November last year, where they listed a handful of areas they thought required urgent attention from governments and policymakers. And I believe the potential for the big digital platforms to become much more active in financial services was one of the areas that the European banks were interested in exploring. Of course, for EU-based banks, there is a very tangible change in their circumstances with the entry into force of the European Union's updated Payment Services Directive, the second Payment Services Directive, affectionately known to all of us as PSD2, of course, right. Which less than a decade after the first EU-wide law on payment services, they realized that in less than a decade, the world had moved on so quickly that they really needed to have a do-over. And I think the combination of the open account data access that PSD2 mandates for all banks in the EU with the provisions of the General Data Protection Regulation, or GDPR, sorry, last acronym, I promise, in the EU is, I think, that conjunction, the combination, the way GDPR and PSD2 may produce some unexpected effects involving the platforms, among other things, is one area that I think those European banks had highlighted. I think they, if I recall correctly, they were interested in reciprocal access to platforms' information about consumers. To put it crassly, if a platform, one of the big digital players, is going to suddenly gain access to the consumers' or the bank customers' financial account information, those banks were proposing that it would be nice if they had reciprocal access to that same consumer's information on the platforms. What is their purchase history? What are their interests? What do they search for, etc., to avoid creating a big asymmetry where all of a sudden the platforms would know what they know about the consumer plus what the banks know about the consumer, but the banks would still only know what they know about the consumer. And so I think this creates all sorts of really interesting questions going forward, and to your point about questions in the last few days or weeks, that debate is only just beginning, but expect to hear a lot more about that in coming weeks and months.
I do too. We are about out of time. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you want to add?
So many things, but this was a great conversation. It's always a pleasure, Joanne. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Tell people how they can get information about the City FinTech or anything else you want to direct them toward.
I would encourage everyone to pay a visit to developer.city.com. We opened up our API developer portal late last year. It's live in multiple countries around the world. Exact same APIs wherever they are available. And so for any fintech startups or other participants that are interested in working with city consumers and their information, that is a great way to gain global scale. Sorry for the plug.
Oh, no, that's perfect. That's great. So you did not disappoint. I could go back right off the top of my head and name 10 places where you just said things in such an interesting way. I really appreciate it so much, Anders Wahlberg Stoke, for being my guest today. And I look forward to talking with you again soon.
Thank you very much, Joanne. So do I.
I hope you've enjoyed listening to Anders Wahlberg Stoke, the global head for policy at City FinTech. We have much more information in the show notes. It includes a photo he sent me taken during his recent visit with the State Bank of Vietnam, which is working on leveraging fintech innovation to expand financial inclusion. The show notes also include the link for innovators to use to connect with City's innovation initiative. You need to enter it as https://developer.city.com. Please remember to review Barefoot Innovation on iTunes and sign up to get email notifications when we have new podcasts and the newsletter and blog posts at jsbarefoot.com. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at Joanne Barefoot and come to my Facebook fan page. And please also send in your Buckus Show to keep the show going. It was great seeing lots of people this week at the Online Lending Policy Forum in Washington. And I'm hoping to see many more of you at upcoming events. They include Source Media's RegTech Compliance Transformed Conference in October in Brooklyn, BAI Beacon and FinTech Stage in October in Atlanta, CFSI's Network Summit in Chicago in October, where I'm going to do a fireside chat with former Comptroller of the Currency, Tom Curry. If you are a CFSI Network member, be sure to come to the summit. I'll be speaking at FISCA in October in Las Vegas. Later in October, I'll be at Money 2020 in Las Vegas. I'm going to be emceeing the whole regulatory track there. Note that it is on the Sunday. You need to be there by Sunday to come to all the wonderful regulatory content that has been developed. For me, that's going to include doing a fireside chat with the Financial Conduct Authority's Chris Woolard, on the FCA's innovation activities, and also I'm going to host a town hall with a group of regulators so people can ask them questions at Money 2020. I'll also be speaking at the Central Bank Summit in New York in October, which is focused on blockchain and digital currency. I'll speak at RegTech Rising in November in London. I'll speak at the Monetary Authority of Singapore's huge, wonderful FinTech Festival in November in Singapore. I'll be at RegTech Enable in November in Washington, an exciting new conference. I will be at the UN and ITU Conference on Financial Inclusion in Bangalore in November, and in December, I'll be at FinTech Connect Live in London, then S&P's FinTech Intel in New York in December, and last but not least, December in Amsterdam, talking to the Dutch Central Bank. We have wonderful shows coming up. We have one that's a little bit like today's show. It's going to be with Braden Moore, who leads an innovation payments initiative at Wells Fargo. We also have one coming up with Gilles Gade, the CEO of Cross River Bank, and several Fun Money 2020, including with NerdWallet CEO Tim Chen, and one with, as I mentioned, the FCA's Financial Conduct Authority strategy leader, Chris Woolard. As I mentioned, I'm going to be doing a fireside chat with him there as well. Speaking of Money 2020, I'm very excited to say that the AML RegTech firm that I have co-founded, Hummingbird, has been selected to do a startup pitch there. We're going to have 3 minutes to get everyone interested. If you're going to be at Money 2020, please be sure and come and watch. And meanwhile, keep innovating.